Off the Ball. GAA.
When I talk about the energy from the crowd and the way we play, it's infectious and it drives you on and it makes you make those decisions at key moments to really, really go after it.
Join in the obsession. Subscribe now at offtheball.com/join.
The Racing Pod
on Off the Ball
with William Hill. Who you got? 18 plus. See gamblingcare.ie.
Folks, you are very welcome to Mary Mullins Pub here in the City of the Tribes for the Racing Pod Live. Give yourselves a big round of applause. Johnny Ward, my great friend here, started this program November 2023. We're approaching 150 episodes, and we really appreciate that you've taken the time to be with us here in Galway today. And the sun is out, and it's race week, and we're having great fun. Johnny Ward, you are from Galway. You're back home. Tell us about how you feel coming back to your native land on Galway Race Week.
Yeah, I was here last week. I hadn't been to Mary Mullins before. There's nowhere like Galway. It's just everywhere I travel, Galway is an amazing place. It feels like everyone is partying 52 weeks of the year, JD, really. You know, apparently Rory Gukian, who is a friend of the pub, said that since the start of the heat wave that we've just had, everyone has been partying. We had Brian McClare down here last week on my first visit to Mary Mullins. I don't know how Chalky didn't stretch out to do the Galway races, but Galway races has now mingled the crack of Galway and the great city that it is with good racing, JD, and the only mixed cards that we have in Ireland. And Galway, for me, you know, Ireland has changed a lot. Dublin has changed an awful lot. Cities have changed all over Ireland and all over the world. Galway has kind of just always stayed the same. And Race Week is like no other.
This is the Racing Pod Live with thanks to William Hill. And we are delighted to have three special guests with us today. So we're going to bring them all up at once. And we'll introduce you to who they are. So we've got Barry Garrity. What has Barry done in the game? From the County of Meath, the Royal County, well, he's ridden the Galway Hurdle winner, an Aintree Grand National winner, an Irish Grand National winner. He's been champion jockey. We've got also from the County of Wexford, Conor O'Dwyer here, dual champion hurdle and Gold Cup winner at Cheltenham and now training and has a runner this evening, Conor O'Dwyer. And our final guest needs no introduction here to Galway, a four-time All-Ireland winner with his club, Portumna, and then the 2017 Hurdler of the Year and All-Ireland winner, the legendary Joe Canning. So Barry, Connor, and Joe, you're very welcome to the Racing Pod Live. Joe Canning, I think we only have to give one word to everybody here because it's the word of the day, and that word is Mayo.
Mayo, yeah. Up Mayo. It's probably the only time we'll ever say it as Galway people. You have to admire them in fairness. They've had such heartache over the last number of years, 75 years. Normally, we'd kill each other in the football fields, especially. But I think everybody in Galway is chuffed for them, and across the country,
yeah.
It's some scenes. I've a guy there from he's from Belmullet, but he lives in Portumna, and I had to give him my tickets for the match, and he hasn't been home since. Last video I got was off him this morning in Westport. He went from Dublin to Castlebar to Westport, and I don't think we'll see him for another week.
Yeah, it's like. You experienced that in 2017, Joe. What's that like when, you know, you must be, as you're getting to the end, like almost a clutch position, like, you know, there's so much pressure. And the pressure, whatever pressure was on Galway after, what was that like all those years in 87, into 2017? What would it have been like for Mayo, even though Colby hasn't experienced any of that? They probably felt like when David Clifford got that two-pointer, they kind of felt, God, are we over the line yet?
Yeah, in some respects, I was watching on TV and you were thinking, Kerry are just going to get something here. And even Clifford missed another two-pointer after. But my brother was at it with his daughter. And he said, as a neutral, Mayo winning was way better than Galway because it was like double the time or whatever almost. He said, like, obviously Galway winning 17 was unbelievable for a Galway person. But he said, if you took that out of it and were just there as a neutral, he said, nothing. He was never at a game like it or never at the atmosphere. Like, all the Kerry crowd even stayed. Like, that just shows how much it meant to even everybody. They were kind of going, do you know what? Fair enough. And I don't think there's that many counties that would be okay with maybe losing an All-Ireland to another county, but Mayo just seemed to have that.
Can I ask you, in 2017, when you got the goal against Kilkenny and you went on the run and all that, and you hear the noise, like, what's that like? Because as a Galway fan that time, you're like, I was. It was almost like an out-of-body experience, but you were on the run. Like, what was it like when the ball hit the net?
That was our first All-Ireland 2012, I think. Yeah, it was what you're on about.
2017, so. The following year against Kilkenny. 2012, sorry.
2012, yeah. It's... When the ball hits the net, you just get this roar. Like, it's just a sound. It's not even like... You don't really hear much. It's just a massive sound, and you can feel... It's a bit weird. It's people say maybe the stadium rising or whatever. It's obviously just people getting up off their seats. But it's a good buzz for a second, but then you realise you're playing Kilkenny and you can't really celebrate for too long and they beat you in a replay, unfortunately. But that's, it's there's nothing like it. You can't replace that buzz no matter what you do. Same with the lads probably riding or training or being on TV or doing stuff like this. You can't replace the buzz of the competition, the competitiveness against the best in the business and putting yourself up against them. That's what you do from a young age. You want to see where you stack up against the top level. You'll never replace that when you retire from a sport and playing at the highest level.
Barry and Connor, I think there's been just a real celebration of Irishness the last few days. The warmth, the happiness from people in Mayo, the fact that it's uniquely ours, and you'd know yourselves from going over to Cheltenham and flying the Irish flag what it's like to win the Gold Cup for Irish trainers or the champion hurdle for Irish owners as well. So I think there's something very magical about what's happened the last few days that we can all get behind in a unifying way.
Go ahead.
Yeah, absolutely. And sure, it's as Joe says, you know, at Croke Park, at Cheltenham, that wave of noise, you know, at that explosive moment, and they would have experienced that with Mayo when the Hooter went. And I'm sure it took the Hooter, or maybe it was the play just before that when they got that last point, to realise they were over the line because, you know, David Clifford had missed the second two-pointer. Sean O'Shea had just dropped one short as well. So they were snapping at it. So that's the thrill of sport, you know, of those big occasions. And Cheltenham was probably the place where we would get it at that level. You would get it at an Irish Grand National, maybe Punchdown Festival. Galway played Galway Hurdle, likewise as well. They are, you know, top end. You know, value-wise, they're two of the richest handicaps in the year. So, like, there is brilliant sport in the country like that, and it's a pleasure to be involved. And if you can win one of them.
It's a strange situation, isn't it, when you win the Gold Cup or whatever, that half an hour later you might be riding another race. So Joe can be in the dressing room with his teammates. You've got to go back into the dressing room with your opponent and then go out and ride again.
Yeah, but that's the way your day is every other day of the week. You know, if you're at Galway this week or if you're in Cork on Monday and you win the first three, you could go out and get buried in the next three. So you can never get too far ahead of yourself. And I suppose the game is good in that regard because it keeps you, you're always only one step away from, you know, hitting the dirt, so you're putting your place quick enough.
I always remember 1996 because once again, back then, we didn't have regular winners at Cheltenham like you do now, where we have generally every year for the last 10 years more winners than we would have English winners. But then it was an imperial call. It was a small trainer, Fergus Sutherland, down in Cork, who'd been in the Korean War. And then you're carrying the hopes of... Did you feel like the morning of that race, you're carrying the hopes of the nation to a degree?
Listen, it was fantastic. It's as a jockey... As Joe said, any sportsman, that's all you want to be, is at the very top level, do your best. And, you know, that morning, look, we thought he had a chance. I don't think we thought or dreamt of what was going to happen, really. But in fairness to Fergie, he was very cool. As you said, he was in the Korean War, so Cheltenham was for me. But... yeah, he kept me calm, I think. He didn't put any pressure on. He just said, go out and ride him like it's a normal race. And, you know, we had a lot of faith in the horse, and I had as well. He jumped superbly. He was an easy horse to ride, and you just went out and did your thing, really. And, you know, but Barry will tell you the same, and Joe, like, those big days, you know, that's what you're there for. That's what you really enjoy. Not to knock the smaller courses or the smaller races, they're all very important, but when you get a chance on those big days, and, you know, that's what it's about.
Say, like, you're free that time, 2012, like, did you have a moment like that where you're jumping the last, more or less, you feel the pressure that this is... Is there that moment where Joe had all this build-up, like, when the race is just fluid?
Yeah, it's obviously a little bit different, like, you know... You don't feel the pressure. You jump the last. You're not thinking of things going wrong. You're not thinking of anything like that. You're just thinking, win and post up there, get there as quick as possible. So it's a different, I suppose. Again, it's an individual thing. You know,
yeah.
Teams are different too. So it's probably a little different. But as I said, no, there's no pressure when you're in the heat of the moment.
What was your big pressure moment in race?
I suppose lots of different ones, if you like. Moscow Flyer would keep you on the edge of your seat a little bit, but like that, it's a bit like Connor said, you can only deal with the moment. So, and I'm sure Joe would say the same when you're playing, you know, you can go out with a plan, but you will make decisions, instant, instinctive decisions that you can't preempt. So, you know, you try to take yourself out of the pressure, you treat it just as a race. I remember going into the start on Sprinter Sacra the year he won the Arkell, and like second race at Cheltenham. For me that year, it was all about Sprinter Sacra. And I'm cantering down to the start, and your man is full of it, you know, and he's flowing down. And, you know, my mind starts kind of wandering off, you know, into the whole hype of everything. And I remember pulling myself back out of it and just thinking, no, it's just a horse race, do what you don't normally do. So I think there's a lot of that in any big day, and I'm sure it's the same for Joe or any team player, you know, to take yourself out, you know, not to, you see Shane Lowry was nearly losing the run of himself. Was in the open, and he to rein himself back in, and with his caddy as well. So it's a little bit like that, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. But like, it's for you. I was going to ask that about like Sprinter Sacra. Was that like, you know, when you're on an odds-on favourite, like, and everybody's talking about the horse, and like, is that a different pressure than going out maybe when you're third or fourth in the betting? And I know you're not thinking about the betting and stuff like that, but like, when you're maybe not expected to win, rather than when you're everybody's going, this is the horse that's going to win, like, this is the banker.
Yeah, but wouldn't you rather be on the 2-5 shot, who's probably going to win by 10 lengths, bar you fall off him, than the lad who's going to finish fourth, and never has a chance. So that would be my way of thinking, and I suppose Moscow Flair was different because he wasn't as trustworthy jump, and he could take his eye off the ball, but there's nothing you could do about that. You just went with it. But Sprinter Sacra, you could trust him. So once you did your job, presented him right, keep a lid on him, and you know, keep a lid on his enthusiasm and produce him. It was easy.
Have you ever ridden a horse, Joe?
My uncle's had horses in Kiltomer, the Lynches in Kiltomer and Galway. Kieran and Tommy passed away there last year, the year before, but I remember when I was 5 or 6, he put me up on it and I fell off straight away and never again. So that was the only
lucky time.
Only got fit in a horse anymore, but it wanted to be a big one. But when I was a young fella, but I'd always used to go to the Banislow Fair when I was a young fella.
I can actually see you there. I can see young Joe Canning at the Banislow Fair.
Carrying a few ropes and the horses around my shoulder. But my uncles they'd be always there, they're still there, down in Banislow every year, selling a few ponies and stuff like that. But at home on our farm, we never had horses.
So when we're on about like missing that feeling, do you miss that a lot like that? Because there's no, whatever about playing sport, there must be no buzz like riding a horse 40 kilometres an hour, 40 miles an hour over a fence. And you rode like right good 2 milers over a fence, you rode Moscow Fair, you rode Native Upmanship in those days. Do you miss it?
You'd miss those good days. But there does come a time in every sportsman's life that you're done and that's it. But those big days on the good horses, and Barry said the same there, the Sprinter Sacras, the 2 milers, like the buzz, the
trail. What's the buzz like?
It's very hard to... Very hard to put into words, but like if you're sitting there, as you would say, and especially a horse that you trust, that you know, or 99% know that he's not going to fall, or you just really, really, it's amazing feeling, really is. And again, as I say, it's what you've dreamt as a kid, like, and here we are all of a sudden in Cheltenham on those 2 milers, and that's what it's about.
I was growing up like watching him on like Native Upmanship. What was he like at a fence? Barry Geraghty.
Connor. I did a recording with Jane Mangan a few weeks ago, and she asked me who's the best horseman you ever rode against, and the instant answer was Conor O'Dwyer. I expanded it to Paul Carberry and Timmy Murphy. Just Conor was, and some just because I'm in his company, that's not the reason I'm saying it, but Conor, horses, how they settled and jumped. I remember riding a horse for Arthur Moore, a spare ride one day in Navan. I think it was Owen Duff or something like that, a big chestnut
Owen
horse.
Owen Duff, yeah, that's right. Yeah.
And I promise you, he mauled me down over fences. He was like, he gave me a proper handful. Your man was out in him 3 weeks later. Hands dropped, loose rein, horse jumping like a stag. I'm not basing it on that, but he, to me, he was probably the most natural rider to sit on a horse. They just relaxed, they jumped. But I think a horse, a person's personality comes out in the riding. You know, Connor would be a very relaxed individual, and horses would feed on that as well. So, no, he was a very, very gifted horseman.
Well, what would you have to... So, sorry now if you all know this, but I'm new to this kind of thing, but what would you have to do for a horse like that if he was giving you trouble? What were you doing that was different?
It's just individual ways of riding. You don't change things. I ride the way I was, but I could maybe have a horse relaxed, and it's not maybe the right way for that horse. At times, Barry could get him the next day and have him in his hands travelling, and that might suit him better.
That was just your way.
Exactly, it was just my way, and that was it.
Like. And a feel.
Yeah. Yeah, but again, as you said, like, I don't know, I suppose it's to do with your personality too. Like, you know, I'm quiet, I just tip along, and that's what I did on the horses. I never panicked or just rode them all the same way, really, and seemed to work for a while anyway.
We talked about the thrill there, 2017 in the semi-final against Tipperary when you hit it from the sideline over the bar. Did you feel the instant thrill there because that was the winning of the game and you're the All-Ireland final and eventually win? Or is it such a flash of a moment that it's almost gone before it even sinks in?
Yeah, you do. You get a good thrill. You get a thrill for a few seconds and then the ball is poked out the far side and bubbles the wire, turns around and hits it wide, and that's a bigger thrill. You know? That's when you know you have it.
You'd enjoy that moment better.
I enjoyed that moment nearly better, yeah. See that ball going wide, because it's funny. We played them in the league, I think, maybe the year or two before. And I think the game decided who went up and who went down almost the league. And I hit a sideline. We had to win the game, I think. A draw didn't do us. And I hit a sideline over the bar. Ball poked out, bubbles again, far side, nailed it. Draw match, we were gone out of the league or else relegated or whatever. So, like, there's moments that turn around then again, and a couple of months later, he hits it wide and we win by a point and go on, win the All-Ireland. So, it's funny how history, because nobody would remember, if he got that over the bar, nobody would remember that score.
Well,
that's a fine margin.
Was it your best ever?
Yeah.
Huh? Was it your best score ever?
Oh, yeah, it was against Tipperary, sure.
That's a proper rivalry.
That was easy.
On the border. When you grow up on the border and you're 5 miles from the border, it's like in any sport, you know what I mean? It's the same if we were playing Clare or whatever there on the border, Galway Mayo, Galway Roscommon, whatever it is. You always have a little bit more with different counties. But that's a bit of a joke as well. But it is, it's all part of it. You never... Lots of Tipperary people live and shop in Portumna, so you didn't want to be hearing them for the next week going in. But that was probably, when you look back, it was one of those that you cherish because it won us the match and got us to the All-Ireland, and then we won the All-Ireland after that.
So Barry might come back with Monty's Pass, Jimmy Mangan trained him to win the Antrim Grand National in celebration. You might come back with War of Attrition, Maz Morris. And this is really relevant to Mayo in the last few days. So when you win in 2017, what happens then? What joy does it bring to a city like Galway here and a county? And what do you remember about the whole bringing the cup around schools and celebrating with your people?
Yeah, even as far as like Athlone, like those bonfires on the bridge crossing the River Shannon there. That night there was, I think there was 3,000 people in the City West the night of it. I've said it before, I didn't really enjoy that night because you were wrecked after the match and all you wanted to be was with the team and with your family maybe, and I didn't see too many of them, so I went to bed at 1 o'clock, got up, went to Temple Street, we went to this pub, Noel Larkin brought us this, it's mad the stuff you might realise, Eleonora's in Crumlin, like mad old spot.
Greg Carvery.
Greg Carvery, yeah, I think a Galway person owns it or something like that, so Noel brought us in there on the way back and then went into O'Brien's for another one, then went back out City West home. But just the bonfires, coming into Bannisloe, seeing everybody in Bannisloe, coming into Pier Stadium, and then just there, just outside kind of Buskers in the front door, that street, that was just mental that night, like 4 or 5 o'clock, lads up on shoulders. Bit like Mayo last night in Westport, if you saw the videos this morning, like it was just, It was just mental crack for the week. And actually, the Tuesday then was probably better because it was just the lads together. And then obviously going around to all the schools and stuff. And just like there was obviously a generation that never saw Lee McCarthy in Galway. And it's just really special to bring it home as well and for family and friends, like mum and dad and stuff like that. Because Ollie was so close for a few times. Like we, in 2005, he was playing the senior, I was playing the minor, I won the minor, he lost the senior. And then 17, I won the senior, and Jack, my nephew, won the minor as well. So it was pretty special, that kind of family thing. But yeah, it was just, like even when you walk through the city after 17, 18, there was kids going around the city with hurls and hurlies. Like you never see that. Roughly now, even maybe after the All-Ireland again this year, but for the last number of years, you don't see that. So that gives it a bit of a lift, and that kind of makes it all worthwhile, you know.
Connor, you would have experienced that with Wexford as well in the early 90s. Like what it means to be they're my colours, they're the people, they're my fathers, they're my mother, they're my grandfathers. Like, and it is a special feeling.
Yeah, 96 was obviously Imperial Call, but Wexford won the All-Ireland the same year, so there was mighty celebrations for both horse and the horses bred in Timon in County Wexford by Tom O'Donnell. So it was don't remember a lot of that year actually.
Only 30 years ago.
Exactly. But again, it's what it's about. Like, it's great to see counties or towns or whatever getting behind what you've done, and you know, the support you get, and it's fabulous.
What I found mad on Sunday was like, it was just I was here in Mary Mullins last week talking to lads like, will you be up for Mayo? And some of them were, some of them weren't, but it was really strange. It was just like you wanted to see the emotion from people and see what it meant to them, because like hardly anybody was alive. And like there was a great interview Brian Gleeson did with Bill Durkin yesterday, who was basically alive when Mayo won the All-Ireland. And it was a great interview to have because nobody had seen this. All they knew was 11 finals of hardship, Barry. Like, and it was just like the West of Ireland is a unique place as well.
Absolutely, yeah. And I suppose we all had clashes with Mayo. You know, Joe mentions there was a clash there. Growing up as a Mead man, we had our clashes with them through the 90s.
That was some clash now.
Yeah, that was, yeah, it was a group clash.
A few lads still waiting for a red card.
Yeah, it sure could have been 1-8 All-In, wasn't it? But yeah, there were great years for us, obviously, but there were a struggle for Mayo. And then they would have had it with the Dubs as well in more recent times, and Kerry as well. But it was brilliant to see it. But to witness it, my wife is from Kerry, and three of our kids were at the game as well with her, and two of them were sitting beside a man who was at the final in 51. So like that was, and they texted me that before the game, and I was going, wow, yeah, that's magic, you know. Like, so no matter what way the result goes, that's some experience to have. And you know, we knew it was going to be, you know, crazy if Mayo won, but I don't think you could ever even expect for a second to see, as Joe mentioned, to see the Kerry fans staying on.
Yeah.
When do rivals stay on like that? Usually with 2 minutes to go, you're out the steps and gone. It was unbelievable. I think it touched everyone in the country.
Talk to us about race week then, Connor. What is Galway race week like?
It's one of the best weeks of the year. And as Johnny said earlier on, it hasn't changed a lot. But you get a huge mix of people for the week. You've racing people, you've holiday people, you've non-racing people, you've everything going on. They do things great. The city is fantastic to come into. The race course, the ground is always, you know, the best really in the country. It's a fabulous week. It really, really is. And as a jockey, to have a good ride in the plate or the hurdle, that's, you're really kind of looking forward to that for the week. But the whole week is just fabulous. As I say, everybody gets involved and everybody enjoys it.
What's it like to ride? Because you rode the plate winner Grimes for JP at a while back.
I'm moving swiftly on. you need a good bit of luck around it. It's not a front runner track, but at the same time, if you can have a horse that will travel in the first say half dozen of those better races, you avoid a lot of trouble. And you know, there's bends and you have your hills. It's not the easiest place, but if you are on a horse that travels in the first that half dozen, it makes it a lot easier. To try and come from behind is very hard.
Was that anathema to you, though? Because you wanted your horse to get into rhythm. And like Paddy Flood spoke about this, like the most important fence really in Galway is the first, because like, so is that hard for a jockey who's like, I want my horse to get into a rhythm, like if I don't get handy here, I'm screwed.
Yeah, it's a little bit of a catch 22 because as you say, when you are lining up, you're rushing out the gate to get your position, but then you have to get them switched off to get the trip. But yeah, and I think it's even worse these days. I see the lads now, they're nearly racing in the parade ring to get on the horses to get to the start. Like it's absolutely crazy. Like, I don't know, but yeah, it is hard. But look, at the end of the day, too, the ability of the horse is as much important as where he's ridden. Mm.
Galway Race Week for you, Barry Geraghty, is what does it mean?
As Conor said, it's brilliant, you know, but the Galway people are so welcoming, you know, from the time you arrive here, get your accommodation, where you go to at night, you know, there's a fun atmosphere. I think everyone that comes here come for the same reason, you know, whether you're the local person coming in or you're the weekend person coming from Dublin, like there's probably a changeover in crowds. You have maybe more of a local country crowd early in the week and then get into the weekend, the place seems to be jammed, you know, with people from Dublin or whatnot, but it's a great atmosphere. Brilliant week's racing, you know, the plate and the hurdle. As a jump jockey or jump trainer, they are the highlights. And, you know, you want to have one with a live chance in those races. And as Conor mentions, like Galway is a really tricky track. It's probably akin to Cheltenham as regards. It's so sharp, you're jumping on a bend. It's a tight enough circuit. You know, there's nowhere with a finish like it. You know, you're 2.5 furlongs from the last fence up the hill. It's a long way home and it's going to test any horse. So it's a brilliant, and I suppose that makes the test because there's no fluke. You need a good horse. You need one that's up for it. You know, Conor mentions, you know, as regards position and, you know, over race nearly, you need a horse that is willing to fight for position, not one you have to force. If you need to force him, you're on the back foot. You can't rely on him to get you out of trouble. So you need a lad who's willing to take you, you know, and get involved. So it's you know, I've watched recordings you've done before and they talk about playing and dirty ball. There's lots of dirty ball going on in Galway, not from players, but just because it's so tight. It's so demanding. Yeah,
we'll get some, obviously some tips. We'll go through the card for today and the plate and the hurdle as well, folks, before we finish off the show. But like this strikes me, and having experienced it myself, came here first in 2003, and my cousin's wife was doing hospitality, and she says, do you want to get a helicopter to the track? And I said, no, you're grand. So it just strikes me as a place where there's a lot of fun. What's the maddest thing you've seen at Galway, Conor O'Dwyer?
Jesus, can't mention that here, John.
This will be cut from the show. Chatham House rules today.
Especially years ago, you know, when there was no social media and things, the town was absolutely, you know, buzzing. Now, I'm sure it still is, but for us that were riding, like the hole in the wall pub there, you know, Paul Carberry comes to mind now, but we won't go into it. But a few nights there, like, was absolutely...
Would just you be afraid of being done the next day for breathalyzer, man, like that? Was that a thing? Like,
not back then, yeah, no. Yeah. That's probably only come in what? That's in a while, but
that was part of the party as well. Like, you could have... Like, I remember seeing a jockey had ridden a treble. I'm not sure what age he was, but in the hole in the wall bar, I was like, you know, he's enjoying himself here, but you wouldn't get away with it now because everyone would be on social media.
That's the difference. But look, it is for the better of the sport, and it's same in any sport, hurling, yeah. Rugby. You know, it's the times have changed, and there's a lot more rules and regulations, and you know, it is probably obviously for the better. But thank God I got away with it when we were there.
What about you, Geraghty?
Yeah, no, as Conor says, the hole in the wall. Actually, Mary Mullins used to be called Paddy's Bar. So
way better bar as well.
The hole in the wall got overrun, so we moved here for a couple of years. And there's the little bar down the bottom beside the bus station on Air Square. Now, that was there for a couple of years. It was a little sweatbox. I can't remember what name was trading under then, but great crack. But as Conor mentioned, you know, there were different times you were able to... But you wouldn't be out as much the night before the plate or the hurdle, but... You know, Monday night could be a good night, or Thursday night was the night. So it was a long week by the time you got to Sunday and you faced Cork on Monday on the bank holiday. So. But it was always brilliant. The crack was 90.
It's a unique city, Joe, isn't it? Like,
oh, it is, yeah. Yeah, it's a brilliant city. Like, it's, you've obviously Arts Week last week leading into it. And
we've hurling, we've football, we've everything.
Well, like, I put it this way, right? We've four senior All-Irelands, right? Ladies football, camogie, hurling and football. We're in three of the four.
So we're in the hurling, we're in the ladies' football and the camogie, and the footballers got quarter final or whatever it was. So like, it's a sport mad city as well, but the it's an arty city as well. Obviously artsy. I was here last Friday doing the bit for the start of the RTE thing yesterday, and just the buzz around town, it's magic. Like I'm not living here for the last 6 years now, but geez, I missed it Friday. You'd love to be around, like go for a few pints and enjoy yourself. But it's a great week. It's a great week, and everybody enjoys themselves and relaxes. And I don't know if it's for the better anymore that you can't have a few pints.
I don't think so personally, but
some lads need to relax as well and stuff like that. But yeah, it's just a great buzz, and everybody, you know, they come from far and wide as well, so that makes it special.
You can't undermine as well the social aspect to it. Like I'd say I've fallen in love twice at the Galway races, and by the October meeting I was single again. Like, in fairness, I remember Tudor City, Fran Berry riding Tudor City off 56, and I was going on a first date with a girl, watching it in a bar in Salt Hill, got up on the line, and it just felt like this day can't go wrong. Like, it was just like Galway's like that. It's just you meet people. I remember, like, you meet like maybe a girl you haven't seen in years. You meet her at the Galway races, and it's like people meet people at the Galway races every year, or people that they haven't seen in many years. And it's like there's a special, like, Galway's my home city, but there's a special buzz to the place. Like, and yeah,
Joe, you're involved in a horse called Tyr Óg, which has won three times. So maybe tell us about all of this. I read the Keep the High Balls Low Syndicate.
Yeah, Keep the High Balls. It's a funny enough kind of story. It's my brother-in-law told me about it. Mona Lean is the club in Limerick, Castle Troy in Limerick. And when he was a young fella, he wouldn't be the tallest, and he used to play corner forward. And the manager used to say to the boys beforehand, keep the high balls low into Mikey, right, in the corner. So that's where it came from, the name. And there's one guy, John Moylan from Nina, he kind of owns the horse, and we just kind of rented, about 15 of us are in the syndicate, a bit of crack. She was going well last year around this time. She was first, second, in five races, and then just went downhill this year for some reason. We were probably running her a bit too much, but she's had a bit of a break, and she's back out next week or the week after in Kilbeggan, I think. So it's a small bit of crack. So a lot of lads from Nina, some lads from Limerick, Galway involved. So yeah, it's good old crack, but as anybody in a big syndicate like that, it's some good days out now. We had good days out last year, and hopefully more to come.
It's amazing as well, like nowadays, and we have the Shamrock Thoroughbreds in the corner. What WhatsApp has done for race ownership, yeah. It's like, it's unbelievable, JD. Like, you, when the first horse I was involved in, you had to text everyone individually. So WhatsApp just goes into complete overdrive, like, and I the first horse I was involved in won at the Galway meeting in the October meeting. And
is that when you fell out of love?
I wasn't. It actually was. But it was like, there was so much crack leading up to the race, lads. Like, it was like, yeah. Davy Fitzgerald was the trainer. Like, Davy's absolutely wired, fella from Limerick. Yeah. It was so much crack. Like, he remember him saying one day, like, that horse will win today, but don't back him. Right? So it's like, but David, do you fancy him or not? You don't back him anyway, right? So you get all superstition and all that. And WhatsApp has done for race ownership. And if you want to get involved for small money, it's amazing crack leading up the race.
You've got a runner tonight, Connor.
Yeah, I've a filly in the last race, Lady Arwen. She won in Ballinrobe last Monday night, and she got enough of a penalty just to creep in to tonight's race. So listen, it might be a bit soon for her, but look, when you get into Galway to have a runner and the owner's coming down, and you have to roll the dice. So look, she's a bad draw, but she's a hardy lady now, so we're expecting a good run.
You had Constitution Hill. Was it you did you discover Constitution Hill?
Yeah, bottom as a foal, yeah. Myself and Warren Ewing, yeah, and sold him on, obviously.
Sold him for bad money now.
Well, it wasn't as much as I would have liked to have got, but he didn't look particularly well that day at the sale, so we probably did okay on the day, but it was brilliant what he's doing. Obviously, the wheels have come off the wagon for him, but just a special horse, and great to be him being involved in him.
They haven't, I suppose. Like, he's still...
Yeah, well, sure, look, he...
What would you have done?
I saw lots of videos of him doing the schooling early in the season, and it was going well. But then when he got into company again, he just got brave and let fly.
Confidence.
So yeah, a bit of confidence, bit of panic, bit of blasé. It's hard to, like, he's a very blasé kind of character, and always was. Mm. So he just got a bit careless, but couldn't be trusted really. So you know, it's the PC thing to say that it's the right decision. But it was the right decision because it was only going to end one way, the way it was going.
Are you aware of the story of Constitution? What would you have done with him, or would you see what they did, Connor? Would you have been just like, no, just he just has to jump 8 hurdles there?
Yeah, it's very hard. Like it's you know, as Barry said, like it was his head was his problem, not the ability to jump or his scope or anything like that. But he just literally seemed that he was getting it all to take off, and when he was just changing his mind or putting one foot down, it just looked like a lack of confidence. But you can only do so much, you know. And as far as I said, you could school him 7 days a week, you could give him to a show jumper, and everything would be fine. But in the heat of the moment or the heat of battle, it's all different. So very hard to call it. And look, Nicky was on a hiding to nothing, you know. You couldn't send him chasing if he'd fallen and got hurt. Sure, he's the worst in the world. So it was a very tricky situation now for him.
With other horses like that, is it more out of, are you hoping he might rediscover? Or are you just kind of going from race to race and going, like when he did it the first time, are you hoping in the second time?
Yeah, any horse can do it once, or you wouldn't even think of it for the next race because you'd be saying that was just one in a million type of thing. Then when it's the second time and quite similar the way he fell type of thing.
Yeah, the second was even worse.
Worse probably, yeah. So then you start to think, right, we have a problem here now. But again,
what you can do to train that out, like, because it's a mental thing. It's not a, like a...
It's like it doesn't manifest as panic, but there is a little, there's a trigger in there that's causing a bit of panic, and it's nearly impossible to untrain it, because as I say, I'd say a video of him that they'd send me, videos they were sending me on his prep early in the season, and he's schooling quietly at home, and he is foot perfect. But then when you just put something with him, then you create, you know, a more race-like environment. Next thing, that moment comes, and he's picking up, you know, from here to the camera away or further back, and he's crashing in.
It's like a fella scoring 3-4 in training on Thursday night and going out Sunday and not pucking a ball.
If Conor O'Dwyer had ridden Moscow Flyer, how many times would he have fallen?
Probably never.
Probably
all the time.
He never had won, though. He wouldn't have fallen. But it's like, there's a jockey horse relationship that I can't talk about. Like, how can you tell the dancer from the dance, as Yates would say? Like, and you know, you have that experience with the horse, and Nico and him maybe at a point where, like, and I'm not blaming Nico here, like, I don't want to blame John.
So part of the reason why he didn't do as well at the sales when we saw him, he made a bad mistake at the last point to point. He would have won, finished second, but he hurt his back. But what did he do at the last? Picked up a mile early. So it was in him then. He went through his whole novice season really good. He was very accurate with his jumping. But then the following year, remember when he won the champion hurdle, he went down to the last and he let fly. So that was the blasé. Mm. And it was fine when it was blasé, but then when you get that fall and you get the heavy fall at Aintree, there's a little bit of panic comes in. So it's nearly impossible to untrain it.
Was he the Joe Canning of hurdlers?
Well, you know, people they doubt him because some say he was and, you know, such a great hurdler, but he broke the champion hurdle track record when he won the Supreme on his third start over hurdles as a 5-year-old.
Breathtaking.
So it's kind of, he probably didn't get the chance to show his true potential, but, you know, if you're to ask the question, it's not a bad stat.
This is the Racing Pod Live, folks, here at Mary Mullins Bar in Galway, with thanks to William Hill. We're going to get some tips now and some previews, and obviously as well, we'd love to get some really thoughtful questions. We might be able to give you the chance to ask some questions of Joe, of Connor, or of Barry Geraghty here, but we definitely want to mark your card and give you some winners. Just before we get to that, because we're speaking about the relationship that Connor or Barry would have with the horse. Joe, like, your relationship with the hurl, did you ever have a special hurl? Did you, or were you breaking them every single day? Or
no.
Did you know when your symphony with the hurl and the slitter, is this something that, did you always feel that, saying a certain day, I'm feeling good here, I'm not feeling good?
Yeah, like, there's no doubt about it. I probably would have had 15, 20 hurls at home, but I probably only would have used one in,
like during a season. So I'd take you back to 18, for instance, in the hurl, because there's a bit of a horse racing story behind it, but the hurl I had all year in 18, I never used to use it in training that often because I'd be afraid I'd break it. So it was like my second hurl wouldn't be the same. My third hurl wouldn't be the same again, even though they're probably the 600 grams, they're that finely tuned, the same weight, the same grip, the same two tins on it to balance it out, etc. But when we lost obviously 18, I gave the hurl to JP after that because I rode on it. It'd probably give you better memories than it'll give me.
Class.
And I think he has it in his
class story.
So I think he has it in his bag. It was in my boot for ages, and I was sick of fucking looking at it. So we were down playing golf one day, and I just gave it to him. And I think something like that for him was huge, because obviously it was first year Limerick, won in All-Ireland so many years. So I think it's in his bar in the house, I think somewhere in Martinstown, yeah. So, but yeah, I would have had hurls that we would have made ourselves. We would have had hurley business for years there. I wouldn't have trusted anybody making it. I had to make it myself because there was small little tweaks, even fit in my hand. I'd be weird enough. Maybe some lads mightn't like the one I like personally, and it's the same as Anton, yeah.
JP, you know him well now, both yourself, because in the last few weeks you've had two winners for JP, Connor.
Yeah, we had a great night in Kilbeggan on Friday. One horse actually called Limnock. He probably hasn't lived up to, I'd say, what they thought of him early days, obviously, being named Limnock. But he won on Friday night for us, and another horse, In for the Night, got both of them from Desi McDonough when he retired. So for both of them to win on the same night now was super.
And he was your boss for a long time as well, Barry?
Yeah, an unbelievable man to ride for. And, you know, I suppose it's what you'd learn from him as well. You know, he'd have a different way of thinking and analysing things. So you get to a stage. I was 35 and I started riding from full time, and you know, I'd ridden lots from over the years. But yeah, all of a sudden you're kind of thinking, right? Oh yeah, this is, you know, a different way of looking at things. But a brilliant man, and I suppose for me personally, you know, Joe, you talk about the big days in Mayo and whatnot. But I know my final Cheltenham, I rode five winners and they were all for JP. That was a massive thing for to finish off your career riding those winners for him. You know, someone who backed you and, you know, looked after you so well through your career. So no, brilliant man, as Connor said, to be involved with.
It's not necessarily going to be straightforward for Harry Cobden either, because like Harry's ridden so few tracks over here, like it's not the most straightforward role in the world. It'd be different to the Jigginstown operation, like slightly different to that. And you're coming over. What are the pressures for Harry now at this stage? Because what is he, 27? It's kind of at his peak, or 28?
Well, pressure wouldn't be an issue to Harry.
Laid back.
Well, very. He's laid back, but he's. You know, he worked for Paul Nicholls for a long time, and Paul is a brilliant trainer, but it's a high pressure position. And you know, he'd have got one or two good rollickings, so he survived those. It is difficult, but you know, it goes back to horsemanship, feel. You know, it's the same thing as Joe talks about a hurl and anything like that. It's. He'd get up on a horse and you will feel the track, you'll feel the horse. You know, you walk around it, you understand it. You know, it's Connor would have done time in England like I would have done too. And, you know, you're turning up on tracks around the country that you never rode in before. But it doesn't take you long to figure them out. I don't think it'll be a big issue for him. Naturally, he's such a talented rider. You know, and to have him on the books is, you know, he's going to be brilliant for him.
We got a bit of banging. That old iPad is... So what we're going to do is preview the Colm Quinn BMW Mile Handicap, which is the feature today for Galway, 6:45. And Hardy Warrior, the last time I checked, was the favourite, 130.
I bet you Joe will get on way better than the three of us for the previews. I bet you he'll get more winners.
I must have a look, so.
So Hardy Warrior, the favourite, 130, trained by Joseph O'Brien, to be ridden by Dylan Brown McMonagall. Highly tried as a two-year-old, but has been a beaten favourite on his last two runs. You got Pierre Royal on there. Jagged Edge and Far From Dandy. Got to give a shout-out to the Shamrock,
on the Shamrock
folks who are here. Lear Special, Dunham won it last year, Glen Eagle Bay, bit of money today for Kai Lung into 11-1 and Lord Massusus into 18-1. A low draw, always seen as maybe important in this race at Galway. A mile, 6:45, the BMW Mile Handicap. Barry Garrity, what's going to win it?
I like Jagged Edge. Jagged Edge, I thought. Good win at Nace previously.
ran well in Ascot. Just probably could have done with more cover. So I don't think there'll be a problem getting cover for Jagged Egg going around Galway. So I think he can upgrade that form he showed in Ascot.
Conor Dwyer, what wins it?
It's very open. It's, again, as we spoke earlier on, you need a lot of look around the place. But Joseph's horses are absolutely flying. It's hard to look past them, really.
Johnny?
Yeah, Jagged Edge, I don't know what to make the run to Ascot because he did so much right and then he kind of faded out of it. But he was brilliant at Ace, and Barry's a very good judge. And I know the Shamrocks obviously were with Ado McGuinness, and Ado and Stephen Thorne related, and they're such I suppose, close allies. And Ado's been such a good person for Stephen as well. Pierre Royale for me for Ado. You just want to see the way he won at the Curragh. He is perfect for this race. He's so lightly raced. You're looking for a horse here that have something in hand. I'm not sure you can improve one out of Dermot Wells, but I wouldn't be of this belief that, oh, he was with the top trainer. You can't improve one like that. He's only had, three handicap starts. He was brilliant at the Curragh. So he'd be one of my bets today, Pierre Royale. Lovely drawn 7. And if you're backing on course, guys, it's 16 runners, which is a really good each-way betting race.
4:40, the novice hurdle, 2 miles, Gomez Adams, 7-4 favourite, Henry de Bromhead Train, Star O'Keefe will ride. Also money for Fastnet, Crystal, Porcupine Bank and Milan Fourth. Any strong view?
I think it's very open. I think it's a more open race than the betting suggests. I thought Porcupine Bank is on the back of 2 good wins, good performance the last day. Kay Lung was 3rd behind him. I'd say it wasn't a straightforward choice for Jack Hendy.
5:10, then we've got the Latin Quarter Beginners Chase, 2 miles, 2 furlongs. Love Me Tender, the 11-8 favourite for all the Elvis fans here. William Mullins and Harry Cobden teaming up for that. Also money for Frankie John and William Tell at a price. Any views of note here?
It's a mad race. Bones on Fire is 11-2.
Yeah.
This is just how good. I used to put down Galway and I used to say, oh, Goodwood is this, good as that. Galway's really, really, really strong racing. And when you see a horse of Bones on Fire, I'd be mad against Love Me Tender here. Barry's going to give us a bar or two of Love Me Tender if this horse wins. Tongue tying for the first time.
Is that not good? Love Me Tender's 3-3 in good ground.
Yeah,
it's lower ground. Tongue tie first time.
It's a good race. I'm going to put up Jolly Jewel here at a massive price. I think Brian McMahon has trained her for this meet, and she'll need further, but she'll come into her own. And she has chase experience. No chase experience around here. 5-4 first time tongue tie. That'll be my lay of the day anyway.
22-1 Jolly Jewel. Johnny's tip in the 5:10. The 5:45, the handicap chase, 2 miles, 2. Fort Randall for Noel Kelly and Giant Haystacks for all the wrestling fans. For Ross O'Sullivan, are joint favourites 13-2. Also money for Leave and Secret, Tell Us This, Persia and Mount Shenshan. Looks open enough.
Yeah, Fort Randall was the one. I'd done the big gamble in Kilbeggan back in April. And Noel Kelly's a shoot operator. One in
Can you
Carton
understand him when he's talking?
Don't need to, sure. Yeah. That's your job.
Noel has a harsh Coleraine type accent. He's doing well this year. He's been a breath of fresh air.
And Oren Kelly, good lad. Or McGill, good lads, good family.
We have the Phillies Maiden at 6:15.
I'm with Ned in the Park. There is just
Ned in the Park for Johnny.
For Dara and Tim Doyle. He jumped brilliant at Wexford, Connor's local track. It's his first handicap. He's a typical walk in the park. I think he'd be a lot better over fences, and he's run off his hurdles, Mark.
I think we got some commentary there from people are already getting involved, I think, in Goodwood or whatever. But we have the 6:15. Johnny's gone for Ned in the Park into 5:45. With the 6:15, the Phillies Maiden at 7-furlong race. Madam Secretary, 2-1 favourite for Aidan O'Brien and Wayne Lorden. Argent Arius is the clear second favourite at 9-4 for Daniel James Murphy and Ben Cohen. Is it a 2-horse race?
I don't think it is. No. Paddy Toomey's horse is supposed to be okay. The Good Wife. Keep an eye out for the Good Wife. Even if you're still with a good wife, you've never had one, or you're better yet divorced, the Good Wife draw 11 is apparently well touted. And Paddy Toomey trained Carmers at 10-1 to win first time out, so they can win, taking on Daddy Longlegs, who runs tomorrow.
We have then the 7:15, the handicap over 7 furlongs. Eddie G is the 130 favourite for Ado McGuinness and Dinamarra McMonagle. Also money for Go Atletico, Great Mover, Red Hugh O'Donnell and Vilhova. Any views?
Honor?
Again, a mild handicap now, very open. As I said, I'd honestly stick with Joseph. I'm sure there's loads. Again, it's just about having a bit of luck around Galway, but I couldn't pass Joseph's now.
Joe, you're on the Racing Boss website there, are you?
Yeah.
What are you having?
For the 7:15?
Yeah.
Eddie G, yeah.
Eddie G.
Larry?
Oh, the 7:15, sorry. I was on the...
Goal Exceeded, I like.
On the wrong race there.
7:45.
Edo has a big hand, so the lads are right. Tipping two Edo horses there.
Irish Maiden, 7:45, folks. 7 furlongs, Starborn Legend, 6-4 favourite for Joseph O'Brien and Dylan Bramick-Monaghan. Again, money for Uncle Goldie. Anything we like?
I'm tipping, my son is called Cooan, and I was leaving today and I was dropping him into the creche. He was like, and he doesn't like the horse, but he goes, I want to go to the races. So his name is Cooan. So Cashlaw Ni Cooan, who's a filly, very well-bred filly by Maymass. I actually like her both her runs. So around about 50-1 back her each way.
And then we have the 8:15 handicap, a mile and a half. Sanair, 4-1 favourite for Ross O'Sullivan and Dara Donagh O'Connor. Also money for Finchscale, Annie, Longshore, Grey Leader, Queen, Athel, Vlad and Blues Emperor. This is one you've got, Lady Arwen in, Connor. We hope you do well this evening. So,
yeah, hopefully.
What's the danger?
Yeah, well, good few quid for Ross's.
He's had his
last year, sure, a fabulous week.
Good fella, Andy.
Yeah, absolutely. Really good. And obviously, well able to train. But when you see the money for that, I think he has course form as well. So, obviously, you know. But again, it's a very open handicap.
How are you drawing, Connor?
She's terrible, 20. You know, but now we were just talking about earlier on, and the fact that it's a mile, you are straight for a good bit, so, and it's not important how she's ridden, so it mightn't maybe come into play too much.
Have you been getting tips, or anybody trying to give you tips now, Joe, that they knew you were on the show today?
No, they're all asking me for tips, but one of the lads' horse is coming down tomorrow, Johnny Soda, in the third last.
Another Edo horse, yeah?
Huh?
Another Edo McGuinness horse.
Yeah.
Johnny Soda,
yeah,
folks.
So they're all coming down from Dublin tomorrow for it. So you never know. He won last week or the week before as well. Sunny South West End, the second last as well. One of the other lads is a horse.
I fancy that, actually. I got good word for Portumna to win intermediate this year from Mike Hughes. Yeah. What sort of chance for you?
I don't know. There's about 16 teams in it. I'd say any of the 16 could win it, to be honest.
You're playing centre-back at the moment.
Yeah.
I'll be playing a young lad called Mannion. Carl Mannion, is it?
Carl Mannion be running rings around me now in another few weeks, yeah.
That'll be some spectacle. Carl Mannion, centre-forward against Joe Canning in an intermediate club game in Galway. Like, that'll be...
I'll be just turning 38, by the way, when he's marking me. So
turning 38.
That should be a fun day for me.
We're going to open up the floor to questions in a moment. If you do have a question you want to think of, the Galway Plate tomorrow, 6:40, folks, 2 miles, 6.5 furlongs, the big chase of the week. Do you like anything, Barry?
I like Will the Wise. He had a good run by Madara at Cheltenham. He won the Topham at Aintree. He has course form. You know, you talk about a horse who's willing to fight his corner. This is willing to fight his corner. He also jumps fractionally to his right, which I don't think would have suited him at Cheltenham or Aintree, but he still overcame that. But he was brilliant here in October. I think he's the one for me. In an open enough race, I'd have a question mark about what do you think? I know he's on his first run for Gordon Elliott. Gordon potentially has found an improvement in him, but I'm not sure what you thought, Connor, but he just struck me as a horse who was a weak enough finisher. I think he'll need to be a good bit better than what we've seen to get from the last to the line. So Will the Wise is the one for me.
Aren't you fancy
it? I suppose it's very open, but I wouldn't mind having a few quid on Jesse Evans. He's an unbelievable...
Noel Mead.
Yeah.
Doesn't stay. No, even Noel says he won't get home.
He might, but I'd say they'll be riding him that way, and in a plate they can go a hell of a gallop. And I know you have to get the trip, but if you're sneaking around to...
Your type of ride now.
Well, he's just been an unbelievably consistent horse, and Noel knows how to have winners in Galway.
I don't know, folks, you ever remember a movie called Barry Lyndon in the 70s, which is filmed here in Ireland. He's 20-1 shot. I saw him win at Ferry House the last time for Dermot McLaughlin, I think, for JJ Slevin on board. Might be a bit of an each way about Barry Lyndon, about 20-1 for the Galway Plate tomorrow. Johnny, what's your Galway Plate pick?
Rocky's Diamond, laid out for the race by Declan Queeley, a very sharp operator, will be up in with the pace, so will avoid trouble, and is a course winner at one of the late meetings last year. He's around about 12-1, and he's a lot of upside because he's still a novice, essentially.
4:30 on Thursday, the Galway Hurdle, folks, and we have El Kairos, the favourite there for that. You got Mercia, Put Your Hands Together, starting 15. Laffey, given the way the Durkin's horses are running, might be a contender. Yeah. Anything you like?
No, again, Durkin's, you know, they're Gary Bannon's doing an unbelievable job with them. They were second and fourth in the mile race yesterday in the amateur race, amateur race. Again, very open, but you have to look for something with a bit of value, a bit of each way price. So yeah, it's
a funny race this year, Barry, because it's basically probably not going to even fail hardly, or if it has, it was basically 24 entries. Put a Pound in a Jar, who was quite modest, like in terms of hurdler's form. He's owned by Ray Grehan, who would have, my father bought land off his dad, and I think his brother bought land off my father just down the road in East Galway. And Ray has done well. His brother is a very well-known senior counsel actually in Dublin. So they're a really highly successful family. But Pound and Jar is a nice horse, and maybe Tony Martin. I was cycling the other day, and I was frantically trying to remember the name of Tudor City for about half an hour. What was the name of that horse? And it was the horse that I backed that then went on to win 2 Galway hurdles, and Tony hasn't gone away.
Folks out there, anybody with a question for the panel here? Anybody with a question? Don't be shy, but if you don't want to ask a question as well, that's okay. Anybody want to put their hands up to ask a question? One man here.
Barry, you were talking there earlier on about Constitution Hill, right? Not to bring him up again. He's been a fabulous horse. But just on a question, and maybe for Connor as well, the 2V, right? A horse that we looked, that went over hurdles and was unbelievable, right? And there was a rumour, we don't know whether it's true or not, maybe you might be able to shed a little bit more on it, right? Whether he was schooled over fences, right? So if he was, would that have been a factor, or could it have been a factor in affecting him over hurdles and in his eye line and future? Would you?
Well, it's often a positive thing to do. You know, if you have a horse who's been a bit casual over a hurdle, school him over a fence and it'll just sharpen his mind. And Conor, I'm sure you'd feel the same.
Yeah,
and,
definitely.
You know, it gives him a little bit of respect.
Yeah.
He did pop a fence after he fell in Aintree, hence why he jumped so big in Punchestown. So, like, it's a bit like people questioning Tom O'Sullivan being played for Kerry on Sunday. You know, you only know afterwards. So it probably wasn't the ideal thing to do, maybe, but it was still a good thing to try, because you're trying to give the horse, you know, to try and create him to give his hurdles a bit of respect. So it's something Jesse would have done a lot, for example, and Jesse was a top-class three-day event rider. So, you know, it's not wouldn't be something I doubt or I question.
Yeah, and it would normally would do the opposite to a horse, a hurdler that steps, that stands off too far and steps. When you school him over a fence, then he kind of backs off and, as you say, climbs over him. So,
but a bit more focus.
Of, yeah, exactly. Yeah, something more to think about.
Anybody else with a question? Anybody else? This gentleman here.
The question for Joe. Climber man here, Joe. back to the hurling. I've been watching hurling all year now, and I'm just surprised at the inability, I suppose, in a way, of a lot of hurlers not being able to take the sideline cut. Obviously, you were the master at it, the way you used to. Do you think it would help if they decided to give maybe 2 points for a sideline cut that you can put over the bar?
I think there's talk about it, actually. Talk about bringing it in next year. 2 points for a sideline. When the goalie hits the puck out short, he can't give it back to the goalie. There's talk about bringing that in. There's talk about if you get fouled that you can just solo it and run away for 10 yards. I think the whole possession-based game has changed that now if you hit a sideline and it goes wide, everybody, the crowd included, will go, oh, why didn't he hit it short? It's probably a little bit too risky at times now. So you see a lot of the better teams, like Limerick never go for it. They always play it short, normally try work a score, normally comes out. So when you see the best teams doing a certain way, you see all the other coaches around the country then following suit. If Limerick were up at 3 o'clock in the morning doing gym sessions, every other club team or county team is going to do gym sessions at 3 o'clock. So it's a kind of a, you follow the trend as such. If Limerick were shooting and getting scores, which I'm sure some of the guys that play with them can, then every other team would be doing it. So it's a little bit trendy in some respects. But definitely, if there's 2 points on offer, it probably will be more, you'd be more enticed to go for it. Because you see the two-pointer in football now has definitely changed the game for the better, I think, in football. But it's an interesting one. Even in Camogie, they can hit it out of their hand from inside the 45, which I don't agree with, to be honest. I think it takes away from that skill of taking a sideline anyway, but it's supposedly to try and speed up the game. But yeah, maybe 2-pointer could be the answer, all right.
Thank you for your question, sir. Okay. What's your nap of the day, Barry?
Nap of the day, no. There was one I didn't get to mention, the Galway Hurdle, and I wanted to give a mention for our horse there.
You won that race.
That's old news. Solness.
Yeah, yeah. Solness for the Galway Hurdle.
I think there's question marks about a lot of these. El Kairos, you know, he's a horse. He hasn't shown it on the track yet. I know Gordon Elliott says he shows a lot at home, but JP McManus, very shrewd operator, and JP would often say, I'd rather believe what I see than believe what I hear.
His last two runs were disappointing now.
Absolutely.
Just haven't gotten home.
And the horses that he was with, that he was beaten when he fell in Leperson, haven't turned out to be enough lot. But I thought Solness, he won his last run over hurdles, having had 12 runs over fences. So to me, he's versatile. I think he has the ability, he has the class, and he's a fancy price.
Nap of the day, Connor?
I think with my own filly.
Lady Arwen this evening.
Yep.
And nap of the day, Johnny?
Sanair in the last race has been very well backed. Looks very obvious to me.
Sanair, for young people who are getting involved in sport, Joe Canning, any advice for young people that would be maybe thinking about being the next Joe Canning or the next jockey, just before we finish up here?
Oh, jeez. Just back Connor's horse this evening. That's the best advice you can give.
All I can say is that the Racing Pod Live has taken a very wild turn, but we do appreciate that you've come here today.
Can I give a mention as well?
Go on.
I don't think it was ever done before. I was trying to think of Tudor City, and Harvey had, what was Harvey's horse, won 2 or 3 times in a week? I think he had a horse that won 2 or 3 times a week, but there was only one cool poet, and Ollie, I see Ollie here and all the connections. One cool poet won on the 30th of July, the 1st of August, and the 3rd of August in 2019, and they say you should have 3 weeks between races. One cool poet won 3 times in a week in Galway, so good to see Ollie here.
Be sure to tune into the Racing Pod, folks, for myself and Johnny every Friday. Don DC Free Zone. The pod is free wherever you get your pods. We would encourage you not to miss out on the Racing Pod Club as well. We went to Gavin Cromwell's yard recently, so offtheball.com/Racing Pod Club to join the club. Really great fun, and we hope to see you in the future. A big thanks to our sponsor, William Hill. A big thanks to everybody at Mary Mullins here. Thank you, Mary Mullins. I want you to please give a big round of applause to our producer, Brona Davies, and our fantastic production team, tech team, Chris, Dave, Peter, Josh, Sam, and anybody else I've missed out. I apologize if I do. And finally, our guest, Johnny Ward, obviously my buddy here. But more importantly, Johnny, on this day, Barry Geraghty, Connor Dwyer, and Joe Canny. Thank you for being a part of Off the Ball's Racing Pod Live for Galway 2026. We appreciate your time and have a great day, folks. Take care.
The Racing Pod
on Off the Ball
with William Hill. Who you got? 18 plus. See gamblingcare.ie.